we are holding on Kofhei Yomid Beis by the Mishnah. Continuing on the topic of Makablam and Chorcha, the Arisim and Chorchim, the various cases where somebody rents or for where somebody rents or sharecrops or whatever field, Mishnah says, Makabal Sadim Echaveri, V'Ochbo Chorov, somebody was Makabal a field from somebody else, and the field, the produce was eaten up by locusts, or Nishdifa, or was damaged by an east wind, like the bad ears of grain in Pharaoh's dream, Shduchos Kadim. Im makas medinahi, so if it is something general in the whole area, the whole medina, as we'll see in the Gemara what the exact definition of that is, menakalem in chakuroi, then the landlord has to reduce the rent that the other guy owes him. So we're talking about a chorcher over here, where he's renting for a certain fixed amount, for a certain fixed amount of produce. I'm not sure if there's a difference. I mean, the point is, the guy said that the deal was that he's going to pay X amount in rent, that he's going to pay X number of bushels in rent. Like this, the property was damaged. If it was Marcus Medina, you can't say it was his mazel. You can't say it was your mazel, therefore, tough luck, you got to pay anyway. But the Marcus Medina was a widespread thing. So, therefore, you have to deduct from the amount that he owes you. In any Marcus Medina, if it's not, if it's just something local, if it's something specific to that field, then he does not have to deduct from the rental, because then he can say it was your mazel. Your mazel, I'm not responsible to bear any of that loss. Rabbi Yehuda Amim, Kiblai Men of Amos, Rabbi Yehuda says, if he was a choicher, but not for a certain amount of produce, but rather for a certain amount of money, either way, he doesn't have to deduct anything from the rent, because the whatever it is, the chaga, the locusts, or the east wind, or whatever, affected the grain, affected the produce. It didn't affect money. So therefore, remember, there's a few different ways, right? You can have an artist where he's getting a certain percentage of the crops, right, which we've had some of the previous Mishnayos in our parak have dealt with that. You have the choicher who's paying a fixed amount. He's the subject of our Mishnah. He's paying a fixed amount of produce. So for example, in produce. And then you can have also a variety of that where the choicher pays a certain amount in cash. So if you heard this, well, no, an oris is getting a percentage. An oris is, for example, I'm your oris. I'm going to get 25% of the crop, let's say, and you're going to get 75%. No, of the crop, of the actual crop. So the crop itself. If there's 100 bushels, I'll get 25. If there's 200 bushels, I'll get 50, etc. Yeah. A chocher is no. There's a fixed amount. I'm going to pay you every year 25 bushels in rent for this field. So it depends. If the field produced 100, then I'm getting 75 out of it. If it produced 200, then I'm getting much more. If it produced only 25, I have to give you the whole 25. Now we're saying that in the case of a chocher, the produce of the field was damaged. If it was a makas medina, you can't charge me that full 25. So it was a makas medina, whereas if it was specific to the field, then you can still. I don't have 25 in grain from the field. I'm going to have to buy from the outside world. I'm going to lose on the deal. Tough luck. It's my mazel. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying there's a difference in that. Even if it was a makas medina, Rabbi Yehuda is saying if it was a chocher for money, where he's saying I'm going to pay you every year $25 rather than 25 bushels, then any manakalim in chakura, either way, the rent doesn't go down because there was a makas medina on the grain in the field. There wasn't a makas medina on the money. Therefore, you still owe me that amount.
If they agreed
that he's paying him in cash rather than in kind. Okay. So the Gemara says, hey, chidami makas medina. What is considered a makas medina for this purpose? Let's wait till the end of the Gemara before the next Mishnah, and you'll see. You know in general that when you have a Mishnah, you know that usually the halacha is like a chachamim against an individual tana. But wait, we'll see. So Amrav Yehuda, kagan de ishaduf ruba de boga. Suppose that most of the fields in that particular valley, you usually have one big valley or one big plain over there that have many small fields in it. If most of the fields in that area, in that valley, were attacked by locusts or shidofa or what have you, that's considered a makas medina. Ula says that you don't even need that as long as four fields on the four sides of it were all affected. So all the adjoining fields were affected, then it doesn't matter even if that's not most of the valley.
That's called a makas
medina.
For Ula.
It could be, I mean, I suppose it could come a Kula or a Chumra either way. It depends on the number of fields in the valley. It depends. I mean, yeah, I suppose you could have 51% of the valley was damaged, but it happens to be that the four fields, that one or two of the adjoining fields weren't. But yeah, it could come either the Kula or the Chumra either way. Rishonim also argue among themselves who the halacha is like in the end, is it like Rabbi Yehuda or like Ula? Okay, onward. Omer Ula, bo b'mar rova. They asked in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, given this idea that we're saying that if the fields surrounding it are the ones that were damaged, then we have to ask, Nishtef telem echad apnei kol amai. What would happen if, for example, of the adjoining field, the four adjoining fields, only one row, telem is a line of plowing. You plow the field in straight lines, and they're one next to the other. So suppose that you have the field that we're dealing with over here, the field which was under Chakira is over here. Here's the four surrounding fields. What happens, for example, this field, most of the field was not damaged, but the one line of it closest to this field was. Or the other way around, Nishtar telem echad apnei kol amahu. What happens the other way around? If the entire field on this side and on the other three sides was damaged, except for that last one row adjacent to this one. So yeah, this whole part was damaged. The damage skipped this row, and then this field was damaged as well. Because in either of those cases, you could argue that the fact that you have one telem on all sides, well, you see then, therefore, so it's a makas medina. It's not specific to this one field. On the other hand, maybe you need the entire field. And the other way around, maybe you could argue that if one row is left adjacent to this field, then it doesn't really matter. It's bottled to the whole, where the whole rest of the field was damaged. So the fact that there's one intact row next day, it doesn't matter. Or maybe it does matter. Maybe you can argue.
20%, 10% of the field.
Well, that's what we're asking.
You know, you can say this row, the middle row.
The point is if you have undamaged crops all surrounding this field, and the rest was damaged, or the other way around, you have damaged crops immediately surrounding it, and the rest undamaged. And suppose that these four fields are, suppose that the four fields immediately adjacent to this one are all empty, uncultivated fields. So those obviously weren't damaged because there's nothing there to be damaged. And then the fields around those were damaged. That's what we have to ask, all these possibilities. Again, according to the Behoda, none of this comes into play. According to the Behoda, all you do is you look at the entire acreage of the valley. That's you figure right. out whether it's 51% or more. Exactly. And that's, according to Ulla, that the key thing is that the four fields on the four sides of it are the ones that are damaged. Then we can ask all these questions. These are important questions to know. And again, according to the Rishonim, who say that the halacha is like Ulla, then these are legitimate questions in the end of the halacha as well. Okay. So if sikaberamai, so what happens if one or more of the adjacent fields or the surrounding fields were empty, uncultivated fields? They weren't damaged, but the fields further out from them were. So again, on the one hand, you could argue, look, I mean, they're the ones closest here weren't damaged. You can't call it a makas medina. On the other hand, if they had been planted, they may well have been damaged also. There's no way to know. And another question, aspastamai, what happens if the fields that are adjacent to this one were planted with aspasta? Which is it's a type of thing that you use for animal feed. In modern Hebrew, aspas means alfalfa. You can buy alfalfa sprouts in the store. People eat them nowadays. In the old days, only animals did. Whatever, some kind of crop that's meant basically for animal food.
We can use for ourselves.
Okay. The bottom line is those, let's say, weren't damaged. Again, you have a similar idea. The field here, which we're dealing with, which the landlord and the tenant are arguing about, was damaged. Next to it, all around it, or on one or more sides of it, are fields of aspasta, which weren't damaged. The fields outside of those were planted with wheat or barley or what have you, and they were. Again, you can ask the same question. Do we say that, look, again, the surrounding fields weren't damaged, therefore you can't call it a makas medina? Or, but if they had been planted with tzur, they might well have been damaged also.
It depends also on if that specific crop is more damageable.
Not necessarily.
Than others.
No, because if we're talking about that there's a gzeira min hashamayim, that ultimately, I mean, as we're going to start talking about in the Gemara now, we're going to start talking about these things like gzeira min hashamayim that may apply only to one crop as opposed to another. Well then, maybe the gzeira was only on wheat, for example, and not on barley, or only on crops for humans and not, or only on crops for humans and not for alfalfa, etc. So another question: chiti legabi seorim kezera achad. Sorry, zera acher mai. What about another case? What if the adjacent fields are planted? Yes, they're planted with human crops, but not the same kind of crop. Let's say one was planted with wheat and the other one was planted with beans. Or chiti legabe sodim, because they're achadom yeloi. What about if we're to say that a different kind of plant is considered a different thing, and therefore you would say it is considered a break, and you can't say it's a makas medina. What if the one field was planted with wheat and the ones around it with barley, or vice versa? Is that also considered different crops or not? Or maybe wheat and barley are close enough. They're both grain. Maybe they're close enough. And let's ask another question. What happens if the whole rest of the area was damaged by shidofen, by the east wind? That's called shidofen, yeah, where the east wind, the east wind blows and dries up because the east wind in that, in that part of the world, the east wind is hot. We learned about it in Gittin. Right. And therefore, it dries up the grains, and it also it's a very strong wind, so it knocks the kernels out of the grain. Rashi explains on Pare's dream over there, Shtufer's Kadim, that the word Shtufer's, Rashi says, literally means beaten, because they're beaten by the wind, and he explains based on Targum over there, the kernels get knocked out of the grain, out of the stalks over there. All you have left is the empty stalks, basically. That's Shtufer. So suppose that happens to most of the people. So therefore, suppose that happens to most of the area. Shalobi Yerokin, and his own was damaged by a different thing. Yerokin. Yerokin is, I've seen different translations. It literally it can mean mildew, it can mean yellowing, whatever. It's some kind of crop disease. So again, the rest of them were damaged by the east wind, and his happened to be attacked by something else, by disease. Inami kolam kulabi Yerokin v'shalobi shidofin by. Or the other way around, the rest of the fields in the area were damaged by Yerokin. His was spared that, but instead it was hit by shidofin. My, what would be the din in all these cases? And the answer to all of them is teku. So again, according to the Rishonim who say the halacha is like a behoda, that you just look at the majority of the valley anyway, then it's neither here nor there. All these questions are just theoretical. According to the Rishonim who say the halacha is like ula, then all of these are real, honest-to-goodness questions. In practice, in Shulchan Aruch, practicing according to the behoda. Onward. Let's take another case. Suppose that the balabas tells this choicher, go plant the field with wheat. But also who vizarasari, he instead went and planted it with barley. The ishtadif ruba debaga. Now let's say going back then to the Yehuda's idea that you need most of the valley. So let's say indeed most of the valley was affected by shidofen. The ishtadif nami hanasari delay, and this barley was also blighted along with it. So now, on the face of it, you would say, okay, well, it was Makas Medina, that's that. But here we have Ishtaduf Ruba de Boga, most of the valley was affected by this east wind. His was also Ishtaduf Nami Hanachsari delay. So if he had planted wheat, like he had said, and this happened, of course, the Mishnah said, Makas Medina, nothing to talk about. The wrinkle is over here because he planted something different than what the guy told him to plant. So, my, what's the din in that case? Maybe the tenant, the choicher, can argue to the balabas, look, I mean, there was a shidofen. Presumably, if I had planted it with wheat also, the same thing would have happened. Therefore, deduct from my rent. Right. Or maybe not. Maybe the balabas has the ability to say to the choicher, ilu zerata chiti, you know what, if you had planted it with wheat, then there might have been Mekuyim with me, the Pasuk in Iyov, that says, you command something, you declare something, and it is established for you. Meaning, it's similar to Tzadik Goyiz of HaKadosh Baruch Mekayim, but here the idea is, in other words, that sometimes you have a person who has a schus, that what he asks for, his tefillos are always answered, or not always, but whatever, his tefillos, he has a schus, that his tefillos are answered. Now what happens, Rashi says, this balabas will argue then, at the beginning of this year, Rosh Hashanah, when I was davening that I should have a successful wheat crop. Well, you didn't plant wheat, therefore there was nothing for the bracha to be chal on. You planted barley instead. Barley, the Ebrish didn't answer my tefillos for barley, because I didn't daven for barley of Hatzilah. Therefore, you caused me a loss if it hadn't been for that. Now, one of the Mechorishim, the Tertus Chaim, asked, so what? Why should the Balabas be able to say maybe my tefillos would have been answered? And the answer is because in this case the guy was Peshea, because he changed their instructions and planted the wrong thing. Abba, the proof is on him. You prove that my tefillos would not have been answered. Well, how is the Chalitza going to do that? Pay up. That's the question. Tosfos also points out at the bottom of the Amud, now, why doesn't the Chalitza just say, okay, so what? You should have davened in a generic way that whatever crops are planted will be successful, and Abishta might have listened to that. We'll see at the bottom of the Amud, because that would be a bigger net. to act generically, and that the Eidrishter should respond to it, that takes a much greater nest for that. The Meshech Chochma says an interesting thing on it, by the way. You know the thing in Parshas Chukat where it says over there that when the Yidden was starting to get close there to Israel, the Kaknani Melech Arad attacked them, and they fought him and destroyed him. Who's the Kaknani Melech Arad? So on the face of it, it was one of the Kaknani nations. But Rashi says it was actually the Amalekim who disguised themselves as Kaknani. What is it? They wore Kaknani clothing, but they continued speaking their own language, I think it was. So the Yidden are confused. They hear these people speaking Amaleki language, but wearing Kaknani clothes. So they said, and why did the Amalekim do that tactic? Because they figured the Jewish people are going to see them in Kanani clothes, think they're Kananim, daven that they should be saved from the Kananim, and these guys aren't Kananim. So what happens to the Jewish people? They have no choice. It's a confusing situation. Right. They daven, okay, if you give this people over into my hand, if you help me defeat this people, then I'll destroy whoever it is, I'll destroy their cities, and Taka the Eidrishter helps them to win.
So they didn't know.
What? By Shidduch, okay, yeah. But the difference is because she may not be your kasherta, yeah. Right. But by these kinds of things, the point is, in other words, ordinarily, yes, they should have davened for the specific nation. And in this case, they just answered, but they didn't have a choice. They didn't have a choice. When you're davening at the beginning of the year, you have a choice, daven for one particular crop. So therefore, yeah. What the idea behind it is, I don't know, I didn't see anything specific about it. I guess maybe one idea is that if you're davening generically, first, I mean, one idea actually might be, Al-Derech, like it talks about in Kuntra Samayin, that's from the Rebbe Rashab, you know, at the beginning of the year, the Eidrishter decides you're going to have a certain amount of Shefa Melamayla. But does it necessarily come down in Lamasa Me'asara Tzvachim? Does it necessarily come down into the Gashmiistic world in Boner Chayom Zonu Revicha? Not necessarily. It can end up being that it remains Lamayla and has effects in Ruchnius. It can happen that it comes about down here in the world, but in other ways, whatever. So it needs to be diverted into the right channel. So maybe that has something to do with this. If you daven generically, okay, you know, fine. Maybe she'll say, fine, generically you'll have X amount of good, but not necessarily is it going to be Tuva Nirva Nigla, as opposed to if you daven. Okay, so the Gemara says Nistabra, as a matter of fact, yes, it's logical to Amalei that yes, the Balabas does have a valid claim over here. Izarata Chiti, if you had planted this field with wheat, have Makaim be Vitigzer Emavayakam Loch Valder Chachan Nargar. Yes, there could have been Niskayim with me, the Pasuk, that says you declare something and you declare a word and it's upheld for you and on all your ways light shines. In other words, yes, my tefillah might have for a good wheat crop might have been answered like this. You messed it up by planting barley instead. Therefore, no, I'm not going to deduct from your rent. You're chayav to pay the whole thing. Okay. Next.
Well, you're going to find it surprising that you asked the Balabas to deduct him.
Because the fact of the matter is, you could argue, you could argue there was a blight in the general area. Therefore, you would think whatever was planted there would have been blighted anyway. But we're saying not necessarily. Okay. Next. Nishtadfus kolsa dosef shalmachkir. Let's take another case. Suppose that all of the Balabas's fields were destroyed by Shidofen. The Ishtaduf Nami Hobadayu, this particular one that he had rented out to the Sechocha, was also damaged in the same way. The Loy Ishtaduf Ruba Deboga. However, most of that valley was not damaged. So now what's the deal? Miyamrin and Kibindalay Shadok Ruba Deboga Leminakale, do we say, well, most of the area was not damaged, it's not a Makas Medina, therefore there's no deduction to be made, like the Mishnah said. Or maybe since all of this machkir, since all of this balabas's fields were damaged, maybe the choicher is able to tell him, "Hi, mishum losach tidoch." Obviously, this must be your bad mazel. Because all of your fields were damaged, so why should I have to bear the loss when apparently it was your mazel, since it's bad for all your fields that seem to have been singled out for punishment? The answer is mistabra to Amalei. No, it's logical that actually the balabas can answer back and say, yes, but if it had been because of my bad mazel, have mishtayo li purta. It's very likely that a little bit would have been left for me. As we find a pasuk that says we're left over few from many. In other words, because many times we find as a general thing, we find not when the Eidrishter punishes a person, it's not necessarily a total destruction. There's usually something left. This pasuk over here, Kineshanu Ma'at Ma'abe, is talking about after the Churban. Most of the Jewish people have been killed or taken into Golos or whatever. You have these few people who are left in Eretz Yisrael with Yirmiyahu, and they're telling him Kineshanu Ma'at Ma'abe. So we see that even at a time of tremendous zera like the Churban, there's always something left over. So the same thing over here. The Machdir, the Balabas, may argue that if it had only been mitzad my mazel, if I hadn't rented out this field for you, the Eivishta might well have spared it. Why didn't he spare it? That may be your mazel. Therefore, I'm not responsible to deduct from your rent, to deduct from your rent, to have you pay any less rent. Another case. Nishtadfu kol sadois of shal chocher. Now let's take another case. Suppose that all of the chocher's fields were damaged. The chocher himself, besides that he rented this one field, but pashtus he has other fields that he himself owns. So now suppose that all of his own fields were damaged as well as this one that
the
he rented.
The percentage guy?
The chocher is the guy who's paying a fixed amount of crops. Yeah. So suppose that all of his own fields were damaged. Shtadif Ruba de Barga, suppose that also most of the valley was damaged, so far so good, clearly Marcus Medina. The Ishtadif Nami Hoba Dayu, and this one was also damaged along with them. My, then what's the din? Mia Minin Kibin de Ishtadif Ruba de Barga Menakile, well, it's most of the valley, Marcus Medina, deduct from my, make me, reduce my rent, don't make me have to pay as much rent in crops. Or maybe since all of the Chocher's fields were damaged, then maybe it's his mazel. Then maybe the Balabas can tell him, it seems that it was your bad mazel. But all of your fields were damaged. So that's the thing. Rashi explains that when we say Kol Arosei, even fields of his that were in other valleys. This Chocher has fields in this valley, but he also has fields in another valley, and those were damaged also. Most of that valley was not damaged. His particular ones in that valley were damaged, as well as the one that he rented in this valley, as well as most of this valley. Well, now maybe you can argue. The fact is, we see that the damage was not only most of this valley, which would be Machas Medina, but also all of your other ones in the other valley. Therefore, it seems to be your mazel.
Yeah.
Because all of your sadeis were damaged. The answer is mistaber. It is logical that the balabas can tell him, yes, it was your mazel, and therefore I'm not responsible to bear any of the loss. You still owe me the full amount of rent.
It was your mazel because all of yours.
Why should that be? Why shouldn't he say the same thing as the balabas said in the previous case? If it was my mazel, you would expect something would have been left over to have him kindly kimishanu ma'amah. Why don't we say the same thing when the Eivish to punish is he doesn't punish completely, or he doesn't take everything, he always leaves a little bit behind. The reason why that doesn't work is mishum de amalei, because the balabas can answer him back. You have a chazis lishta yuri loch midi, because if you had this chus that something of yours would have been left over, have mishtai loch midi nafsha. Something of your own would have been left over. It's not logical to say if the Eivishter was going to spare one thing of yours, that it would have been. It's not logical to say the one thing the Eivishter would have spared would be this one field, which is not even yours, but you only rented. It's more logical that in that case, one of your other fields in this valley and the other valley or whatever that you actually own would have been left intact. The fact that not shows, okay, you have really bad mazel. The Eivishter is really out to get you,
and I
have nothing to do with it, and therefore it's not my problem. Yeah. Tosfos talks a little bit about over here that the point is like this. Tosfos says even if the balabas were to say fine, you don't have to pay anything. The fact of the matter is he has nothing because the whole field is damaged. Therefore, he has a valid reason to say, look, you taka have nothing left, as opposed to the machkir, after all, the actual karka itself does belong to him. Therefore, he has a valid reason to say, kimishanu ma'amahab, something of mine was left in the previous case. That's the difference. The machkir actually owns the karka, the chocher doesn't.
So
that's the point. In other words, the chocher can't say, well, you know, But after all, I would have had something left over because I would have had some bit of crops from this field. There is no crops from this field. It was damaged. I am going to pass you from paying rent. Okay, but that still leaves you at zero. You still have nothing. Therefore, the fact that I'm making you pay the rent as well, and you're going to be below, you're going to be underwater, not my problem. As opposed to in the previous case, where the machir, the balabas, has the ability to argue kinishanu ma'at mehabe, because he can say there is ma'at mehabe, the field itself, it still exists.
bacteria.
The fuel itself still exists. I'll still be able to get crops from it in the future. All right. Onward. Another case. Okay. No, not another case. Now let's ask a question. What are we saying that what are we saying that going back then to the Mishnah? We said that if it's a makas medina, then we say menachalei min chakura. You have to reduce his rent because it's not fair. It's obviously not his mazal. Now, maybe we have a contradiction. A Brisa says in Erchin, the context that it's talking about over there in Erchin is like this. The Torah tells us that if a person sells his field to somebody else, he gets it back in Yovel time. He's able to buy it back anytime he wants between then and Yovel, provided that at least two years have passed since he sold it and when he wants to buy it back. Mm-hmm. At least 2 years have to pass. And during those 2 years, the mitzvah shnei tvuris, the pasuk says, the shnei has a double meaning, means years, and it means two. There have to be tvuris. There have to be crops. If any, that's what we're going to learn. If any of them was a year when there were no crops, it doesn't count towards the 2 years.
If the guy doesn't want to sell it,
doesn't matter. He has to. Once the 2 years are up, he has to sell it back to him or to his goyel, for that matter, to his close relative who buys it back in order that it should stay in the family. If not, then it returns to him in yovel anyway. But yeah. The Mishnah, the Braisa says, if one of these 2 years was a year of Shidofen, a year of one of the east winds, v'yirokin, or a year when there was yirokin, when there was a mildew or whatever, or one of them was a Shemitah year, or one or more of them was like the years of Eliyahu's times, during the famine in Eliyahu's times when no rain fell at all, then that year does not count towards the 2 years. But then he has to wait another year before he's able to buy back the field, because the guy has to be able to harvest two crops in those two sets of crops in those 2 years.
And that excludes any shidduchim.
It includes a year of shidduchim and a year of yirokin. Right. Now, yirokin is mildew or yellowing or whatever, some kind of crop disease. Okay. So katani shidduchim v'yirokin dumya d'shanim k'shnei Eliyahu. Now we see the Mishnah puts together four different kinds of cases: shidduchim, yirokin, shviyas, and shanim k'shnei Eliyahu. Meaning, in other words, it seems that all of them have to be the same kind of thing. We're global. Ma shanim k'shnei Eliyahu, not global, at least, but country-wide. Ma shnei Eliyahu do I have a tzvua klal? In the years of Eliyahu's famine, there was no rain. There was no tzvua at all. Apochanami do I have a tzvua klal? It sounds like the cases when we're saying that, when the Mishnah is saying shidduchim and yirokin or whatever, that it doesn't count towards the 2 years, is only when it's country-wide, only when it's in the entire Eretz Yisrael is that way. Aval the ikatvur, but in a case where the shidduchim and yirokin or whatever is localized, it may happen in one valley, but it hasn't affected the whole of Eretz Yisrael. Stalkalei, it sounds like that counts towards one of the years. V'leikamin and makas medina. We don't talk about makas medina. We don't say that we should count towards that. There is tvur in other places. So even though that area was damaged, we say, okay, but it was your bad mazel. We don't say it's makas medina. We say it was your bad mazel. Therefore, it still counts towards the 2 years. That's what it sounds like, because it sounds like only if you have something that's makas medina, as in the whole Eretz Yisrael, doesn't that count towards the 2 years. But if it was something valley-wide, it does count. Even if it was something local but valley-wide, it does count as one of the 2 years.
Right.
So then why in our Mishnah do we have the ability to say makas medina, to say it's not your mazel? In other words, why shouldn't we say, by the same logic in our Mishnah, let the makir, let the balabas tell the chaser, fine, it was valley-wide, still your bad mazel, not my problem.
And our Mishnah says what?
Our Mishnah says that if it was a makas medina, meaning just in the whole valley, or most of the valley, then that's enough to say that you have to reduce the rent. Why in that case is it different? Why don't we say in that case that it seems that in that Mishnah, we say only if it was the whole Eretz Yisrael was affected, then it doesn't count. If it was something, if it was less than all of Eretz Yisrael, then it does count. Why? The answer is Amr Nachma Yitzchak Shiny Hossam. Yes, but it's different in that case. There's a special reason for that over there. to Amakra, because the Pasuk says, in that case of Erchin, in that case of the 2 years, because the Pasuk says, the Mispar Shnei Tvuras Yimkolach, because the Pasuk says, according in the number of years of Tvura, he shall sell it to you, meaning that he doesn't have to resell it to, meaning that he doesn't have to resell it to you, or he can't resell it to you, actually, until 2 years that have crops that pass, meaning Shanim Shiyesh Ben Tvura Ba'olam. Shnei Tvuras means years when there is grain somewhere in the world, not in the world in general, but at least in Eretz Yisrael. So as long as there is grain somewhere in Eretz Yisrael, it's not quite a total Shonim Kishnei Eliyahu, then yes, it counts towards the 2 years. But that's a special Gzeiras HaKosev in that case. You can't apply it to our Mishnah with the Chocher. Therefore, in our Mishnah and the Chocher, it, once it's Ruba Deboga, once most of the valley, then the Chocher has the ability to say it obviously wasn't my mazel because it was most of the valley, therefore reduce my rent. And the Balabas has to do that. In that case, there's a Gzeiras HaKosev that it's otherwise. As long as there's grain someplace in Eretz Yisrael, as long as there's crops someplace in Eretz Yisrael, then fine, it counts. It counts as one of the 2 years. And by that logic, why don't you say, I mean, there's crops in the field during Shemitah year. Actually, yes, if we're talking about Ba'olam, if there's crops in the world. So fine, during Shemitah year, there's crops in Chutz La'aretz. So by that logic, therefore, you should say that it's not considered a global makkah, and therefore you should count Shemitah as one of the 2 years as well. Why does the Mishnah tell us you don't? He says the difference is that Shemitah is the king, meaning the Eivishter, is expropriating the land from you, forbidding you to plant it. So therefore, either maybe crops, the crops in Chutz La'aretz, sure, Chutz La'aretz are not subject to Shviyas, but within Eretz Yisrael itself, the crops that are there don't count to this. It's not called a year of Tevuah, because no Yid is allowed to be planting and harvesting Tevuah in it. Therefore, it can't be considered Shnei Tevuahs. So therefore, yeah. Amalei mazutra brejit amori l'ravina. Elameanta. Fine. If you're going to look at it that way, if you're going to say that Shviyas is considered a year that doesn't, as if it was a year that doesn't exist, that doesn't count so far as crops, so far as agriculture is concerned, because of Kasa de Malka, then we have a different problem. Shviyas l'tala l'mina girua. Then Shviyas should not be one of the years for which you deduct a certain amount. Namely, you have another din, the Torah tells us, in connection with field. That, and we've talked about it before. If a person donates his field to Hekdesh, and later on he or somebody else wants to buy it back from Hekdesh, we assess the value of it as follows. We start with, we assess it per base kur, per area where you can plant a kur of grain, as the Gemara talked about before, which is an area, what is it, 75,000 square amas, so it would be about 270 by 270 amas, let's say about 400 by 400 feet, give or take.
75 by 75?
Yeah. 275, it's about 400 by 400 feet. Let's call it that.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a base core. That area, the Torah says, is the area where you can plant one core of barley. That amount, that a field that size, if you donate it to Hekdesh right after Shemitah, when there's 49 years to go till the next Yovel, then that field is assessed at 50 shekel. 50 shekel divided down by 49 years. So you want to make the calculation in Erchin. It comes out to one sela plus one pundion per year. Pundion is 1/48 of a sela. So it actually, at the end of 48 years, actually you have 49 sela, and at the end of 49 years, you have actually an extra punyan. And the other Gemara explains that because you're making change, so you know the money changer has to be paid. Whatever, the point is that let's say, for example, a person donated such a field to Hekdesh, let's say 20 years before Shemitah, before Yovel. So at that time, we assess the value of it at 20 sela and 20 punyan. If somebody is to redeem it from Hekdesh at that point, that's the amount they have to pay for Hekdesh.
20 sela
and 20 punyan. Let's say, for example, 5 years pass, and now somebody wants to buy from Hekdesh, then the amount goes down to 15 sela and 15 punyan. You're deducting one sela and one punyan per year. If you're telling me that Shviyas doesn't count, it's not considered because it's not a year of crops, and therefore it's as if it doesn't exist as an agricultural year, why are you saying that all 49 years you deduct one sela and one punyan per year? You should say you only look at 42 out of those 49 years. Seven of those years are Shemitah years. They shouldn't count.
That's for the...
As far as the din of Shemitah. Yeah. So Shviyas le'tala le'mina girua. So we should say that... We should say that Shviyas does not count as one of the years that you deduct a sela and punyan. So we should say, in that scenario over there, those 5 years that have passed, if one of those 5 years is a Shemitah, don't deduct for that. You only deduct for Sela and for Punyan for those 5 years, let's say. Alamatnan, why is it rather that, no, we learn in a Mishnah in Erchin that it's not like that. No, it's in Sela or Punyan Lashana. You pay one Sela and one Punyan per year, regardless whether it's a regular year or a Shemitah year. What's the difference? Yes, but the difference is that in that case, fine, you can't use the field for agriculture during Shemitah, but it is still, you do have a use out of it. You can use it, for example, to spread out fruit to dry. Now, when it comes to this concept of Sdei Achuzah, when it comes to this concept of donating a field to Hekdesh and later on buying it back, the Torah never uses the word Shnei Tvuos over there. It just has to be a year when you're able to get some kind of use out of the land. Fine, even if it's a year of Shemitah, for that matter, even if it's a year of Shidofen or Yerokin or what have you, you still can get some use out of the land. Therefore, we can say that, fine, it's still worth a Sela and Punyan per year regardless.
If it's, there's anything that
could as long be... as there's something that can be done with that land usefully. Okay, something can be done usefully with the land even during Shemitah year. But that's different than the case of when you sell a field to a private person and you have to wait 2 years to buy it back, where the Torah uses the expression of it as Shnei Tvuos, that you have to allow enough time for him to have harvested two crops from it. So therefore, year when there's no crops, but Shemitah doesn't count. Okay. New topic. Okay, so now we've gotten through all of these. So now we've gotten through all of the various arguments that you could have so far between the Chorcher and the Machir and the basics of what it means Makas Medina. Now a new subtopic within that. Amashmul Loishanu Elisha Zorav at Samchav Achla Chagel. All of this that we're talking about, that we're saying Makas Medina, not Makas Medina, whatever. Thank you. All of that only applies if you planted the grain and it started growing, and then, let's say, locusts or shidofen or whatever came and damaged it. This that we're saying in the Mishnah, Makas Medina, that is saying that if it was a Makas Medina, most of the valley or whatever it is was damaged, that was saying that the Chorcher is able to say there was a Makas Medina. It's obviously not my mazel, therefore you have to reduce my rent. When does that apply, Shmuel said, only if he actually went to the trouble of planting it, and then locusts came and ate it or whatever.
But if he didn't?
Avo loy zorakla, what happens if he didn't plant it at all? And let's say, for example, most of the valley ended up getting damaged by Shidofen. On the face of it, shouldn't he be able to argue that, look, well, if I had planted it, the same thing would have happened. I saved myself some effort in the end, but still,
no.
Do we say that or not? He says, no, look. Because the Machtir can argue back to him, if you had planted it, have Makayim be lo yivosho be'esrael, or we may rov and yisbo. There could have been Makuyim with me the Pasuk, and tell him they won't be embarrassed in a time of evil, and in a time of hunger, they'll be satisfied. In other words, yes, if you had planted it, it might well have happened that the Avishter would have spared my field. The Avishter would have done a nest for me and spared my field from among all the fields in the valley. The fact that you didn't plant it, therefore, you were Peshea. You prevented that bracha from being able to be, that potential bracha from being able to be chal. Hey,
your problem.
Yeah, your problem. Master of Sheshes. So, Rav Sheshes asked the question on this. We learned at the end of Perek Zayin when we were talking about the dinim of Shomim. We said Roya Shoya Roya. If a shepherd was taking care of the sheep, the Yeniach Edra Yevolahir, he left the sheep alone and went into town. And then a wolf came and then killed a wolf came and then killed one of the animals, or a lion came and then dragged away one of the animals, whatever. So we don't automatically say, well, the Roya was obviously Peshea. If he had been there, he could have. Right. So, well, what did we said over there? What did we say over there? That's what we said over there. That depends. If he went into town at the normal time, then if he went in the normal time, then fine, that's different. If he went in at a time when we had the case over there that actually, yeah, he heard a lion, therefore he went into town. It's not the normal time to go in, therefore he should have gone with sticks. But that's the thing. We don't automatically say he could have been there, he should have fought him off with sticks. It depends. It depends whether he went in at the normal time, and it depends whether we assess that he would have been able to do that. Remember, we said over there Shem Achinim only has to do that for 3 years, Shem Asachar has to hire people. So we have to assess the situation. So we don't automatically say, well, if he had been there, he would have saved the animals. We assess the situation. If he would have been able to save it if he had been there, then he's chayav. Now, Vamai, now based on what we're saying that the Balabas is able to say to the Chaycher, and this could have happened to me, why don't we say the same thing over there? Namely, why don't the owner of the sheep say, well, if you had been there, there might have been Mekuyim in me or in you, the nest, like happened to David HaMelech, that he killed a lion and a bear. Actually, Rashi says on the Pasuk over there, what was it, three lions and four bears, I think, that were attacking his sheep. He says to Shaul that you're afraid I'm not going to be able to fight Goliath. The Abish showed me a simon with that. I was able to fight off those lions and bears. I'll be able to he fought them off with them. Well, actually, in the case of the lion, he says over there, I think he said I grabbed a hold of his mane and killed him. Whatever. The point is that the David's saying that Abish showed me a simon already that I'm going to be successful in this kind of thing. So therefore, this Goliath is making a chil Hashem. Let me go deal with him. Anyway,
who's stronger than Shimon and Levi?
Onward, anyway. So the point is that why don't we say over there also, Lachora, I can argue a nest would have happened. Why do we say that? No, we don't say that. We have to look at the situation. B'derech HaTeva. So the answer is Mishum De'Omale, because the shepherd can answer, you have a causes list, or Hoshiloch Nisa. You know what? If you were worthy to have a nest happen to you, have a Israchloch Nisa, could have Khanina Mendoza. You could have had a nest happen like the kind that happened to the Khanina Mendoza, the Martin Izzy Drubi Bukanai, where his goats came home dragging a dead bear. Each of them dragging a dead bear by their horns. You might tell the story over there. There were a guy had left chickens on Rabbanina Mendoza's doorstep. Rabbanina took the chickens in, was caring for them. They're making a nuisance of themselves. So he sold them and bought goats instead, and he left out the goats to pasture. Because the chickens are hard creatures to keep to take care of. So we learned back in Eilat Matzias that there's only a certain amount of time you're obligated to keep them, and then you're allowed to sell them. In this case, he bought goats with them instead, so that the guy doesn't just have money sitting around there. So it's actually earning something for him. He has these goats. He's sending them out to pasture, as the goats need to do. People are complaining the goats are going and then grazing in our properties. Rav Chanina says, I, they're not. I'm taking care of that. But if you think otherwise, fine. Let's do a test, he says. If my goats are actually damaging your crops, like which they shouldn't be, then the Eibishter will cause that they will be killed by bears that are in this area. If not, then the Eibishter will make a nest, and the goats will kill the bears, and each of them will schlep a dead bear home. And that's what happened, showing that Rabbanan Mendoza was right, and his animals, or his goats, were not grazing in other people's property. So the shepherd can answer over here that if you were worthy for a nest, that kind of nest would have happened. So the fact that this Zev or this Ari came shows that it's not my fault. It's your fault. You weren't worthy of a nest. It's your mazel. The name Alay, so what? Why can't the Balabas answer him right back? Nihidul Nisar Abel, I have a Hazena. Fine, granted, I wasn't going to be worthy of a great nest like that, something completely Shaleka Der Hateva. Lenisa Zuta Hazena, but at least I should have been worthy of a small nest. And if you had been there, then you might have had the smaller nest happen that you would have been able to fight off the lion or the wolf or whatever. So therefore, it is your mazel. Kasha, Akasha. So fine. It doesn't. Again, it's not a total stira. We could fan for it, but the fact of the matter is, we do have a question. We do have a question. No, he has to be there with the sheep. If he hears a lion, then it's his responsibility, we said, to get together himself and his fellow shepherds with sticks and whatever for free or for pay, as the case may be. And if not, then the Balabas has a valid claim against him. Again, if he went in at the regular time, then no problem. Fine, it's expected. At certain times, you go into town for the night, you leave the sheep pasturing out until the morning. That's normal, but yeah.
Okay. If he didn't hear that the bears were coming, what is he supposed to do?
Yeah. He needs to be there, and if he sees bears or wolves or whatever it is coming, if he doesn't see them, it's his responsibility to be seeing them. Okay. All right. Tani Chodah. Okay, so now that we're talking about this idea then that we're saying that Shmuel was saying that if you planted and it ended up getting eaten by Chagav, that's when you're entitled to a reduction in your rent, but not otherwise. So now, we have a braisa that says as follows. Pam Rishonu Ushniya Zora, if, let's say, you planted it the first time and it was eaten up by locusts and you replanted it a second time and the same thing happens, then you're still responsible to plant it a second time. Ushlishis Ena Zora, the third time not. Meaning, in other words, this that we're saying, if it was a makas medina, you're entitled to a reduction on your rent. This braisa is saying only if only if you actually, if you planted it already twice and this happened. In other words, if you just planted it the one time and Chogo came and ate it, you're not yet entitled to a reduction of your rent. Because the Balabas can tell you, plant again. It's still during the planting season. Plant again. Let's see what happens. If you plant it a second time and it again gets damaged, then you have the ability to come and say it was a Makas Medina, give me a deduction.
Why? What's the reason?
Because
the first time it can also be a Makas Medina.
Because the first time, okay, it got damaged and happened. Plant it again. Plant it again. Okay. And it's not so simple, actually. I mean, I guess Agra brings over here that the Rif and the Rambam don't even bring this din because they hold it contradicts Shmuel. The halacha is like Shmuel that once you plant it and Chogav ate it, that's it. It's Makas Medina, and you shouldn't have to do it again and again. Okay. But there are Rishonim who do hold it. Okay. Then we have another braisa that says you still have to plant it even a third time. You just don't have to plant it the fourth time. So how do we reconcile these two braisa? What is it? How do we reconcile these two braisa? The answer is Makasha Hakarebi Hakarab Shim Ben Gamliel. The two braises reflect the respective opinions of Rebbe and Rav Shim Ben Gamliel. Namely, we have the machloikas and yivamas and sporadically here and there, whether it takes two times for something happening to establish a chazaka, or whether it takes three times. The classic case we had in yivamas is the case of a kaplanis, for example, a woman whose husband died, Rahman al-Slan. Do we say that once two husbands of hers have died, then already it's three times? Or do we say we had a machloikas over there, we had a machloikas, Rabbi and Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rebbe says that two times is enough to establish a chazaka. Rav Shimon Gamliel says three. That machlokas would also come into play over here. Amar Reish Lakish, Lo Yishanu Ela Shazara V'Tzomcha V'Ach L'Chazav. Here's another din. This that we're saying that you're entitled to a reduction in the rent only applies when you planted it and it started growing and then it was eaten up by locusts. Abel Zorov like Samcha, but suppose he planted and it never started growing yet. Motzi Omale Balakarka Koyime Zara Zara Lova Ozo. Then the owner of the karka, the machir, can tell him, well, keep on trying again. Try it again. This time maybe it was a bad batch of seeds or whatever. As long as it's during the period when planting can be done, go ahead and try it again. So up until what point do we say it's enough? I tried enough times already. That would be Amar Papa Adar Osar Arisi Midabra, until the time of year when the sharecroppers come home from the field, the Kaima Kima Areshaibu, and Kima is overhead. Kima is a group of stars. Rashi says it's Nav Tle, it's the end of Mazel Tle. Tle is Avi. That's the first. So Rashi gives a whole detailed calculation like this. It's like this. Tle is the mazel of Nisan. Each mazel, when we say the mazel of a certain month, what it means is the sun is in that area of the sky, rises in that area of the sky during that time of year. The mazolos also rotate through the sky in 24 hours because it takes 24 hours, 24 hours of the day. So each one takes 2 hours to rotate out of position.
Each mazel.
So you have, for example, Tleh is on the eastern, let's say, for example, Nissan time. Tleh is on the eastern horizon for approximately 2 hours. Then after that, because everything is rotating east to west. So therefore you have two hours after Tleh, you have Shur, and then 2 hours after that, you have Toimim, etc. So, Rashi makes the calculation as follows. If we're saying that Kima is the end of Tleh, it comes out when would that be overhead during Adar time? Because what happens? Adar time, you have that Mazel Dogim is on the eastern horizon. In Adar time, Mazel Dogim is on the eastern horizon. The sun rises in Mazel Dogim. Then you have 2 hours after that Tleh starts rising because that's the next Mazel in the list. next shor, etc. So
that's in Nissan.
That's an adder time. So each mazel takes 2 hours to rise in, and we're saying that. So what happens is then we're talking now basically in the Northern Hemisphere. It's pretty much the same everywhere in the Northern Hemisphere. So Rashi makes the calculation as follows. So therefore, at the first 2 hours of the day, then again during adder time, Dugim is rising. The next 2 hours of the day, Tle is rising. So now it finishes rising then by about 10 o'clock in the morning. 6 hours later, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it's overhead, and that's the end of Tle is overhead. So that's the time we're talking about then. We're talking about the beginning of Adar. When the sharecroppers come home.
So it's on the horizon at 10 o'clock.
At 10 o'clock, then 12, 2, 4, and it's overhead by 4. Yeah.
By 4.
Yeah. Because it takes 6 hours from the horizon to the, right, to the zenith. Yeah. Tosfos argues with that because, among other things, Tosfos says, first of all, Arisen don't come home at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. They come home at 6 o'clock, we said in a previous paragraph. So Tosfos explains, Lahadi Rishaihu, and then also at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you can't see the stars anyway. So Tosfos says that Lahavi Reshaihu doesn't mean overhead, it means level with their heads, more or less. In which case,
straight
ahead, basically. In which case, then Tosfos makes the calculation, it would come out early Shvat. Come out early Shvat, then. The point is, in other words, up until that point, then we're saying, is the time when it's still suitable to plant crops. So if you planted crops earlier in the season and Chagav or what have you ate them, go ahead and replant and try planting again until this time, early Shvat according to Tosfos, Adar according to Rashi. And if you didn't, then I can still hold you responsible and I'm not going to deduct from your rent.
If you didn't
plant again. That's what Rish Lakish is saying. Okay, the Gemara says, Maisvi, I have a contradiction. You're telling me that the planting season is that late in the year. Reb Shimon Gamliel Meshum Reb Meir Oymer. Reb Shimon Gamliel said the following in the name of Reb Meir. V'chein hoyer Reb Shimon Menasya Oymer Kedvarov. And Reb Shimon Menasya said the same thing. That, like this, Chatzit Tishrei Mecheshem Nachatzit Kislev is the season of Zera, from the middle of Tishrei to the middle of Kislev. We have it in Parshas Noach, after the Mabul, the Ebeshah says there's always going to be the seasons of the year. Zera, V'kotir, V'kor, V'chayim, V'kayit, V'chayit. What are the definitions of those? Each one of those six periods lasts for 2 months. From mid-Tishrei to mid-Kislev is Zera, is planting season. Chatzit Kislev Tevis V'chatzit Shvat is Choref, is the winter. Chatzit Shvat Adar V'chatzit Nisan is Kur, is the lesser cold. Rashi explains that Choref is the bitter winter. Kur is just cold, but not so cold. Chatzit Shvat Adar V'chatzit Nisan, from mid Shvat to mid Nisan, is Kur, it's still the cold season, but not quite as cold as Choref. Chatzit Nisan Iyar V'chatzit Sivan is Kotzir, from mid Nisan to mid Sivan is harvest time. Chatzit Sivan Tamuz V'chatzit Av is Kayit, which is the heat, the great heat of the summer. Chatzit Av Elo V'chatzit Tishrei is Choim, is the lesser heat. That takes care of the whole year. Rabbi Yehuda Moni with Tishrei. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you don't start from the middle of Tishrei like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Shimon Benassia saying. You start from the beginning of Tishrei. So Tishrei and Cheshvan are Zera, Kislev and Tevis is Choref, etc. Rabbi Shimon Moni with Cheshvan. Rabbi Shimon says you start from the beginning of Cheshvan, so he moves it up half a month later than Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So he would say, in other words, Cheshvan and Kislev are, Cheshvan and Kislev are Zera, Tevis and Shvat is the intense winter, Adar and Nisan is Kur, etc. So Man Mekel Bekulu, which one of out of all of them is the most Mekel, says that the planting season goes the latest, is Reb Shimon. Bekulah Haile Karma, even he doesn't say the planting season goes that late.
This
Mekel, in other words, in the sense that he says that the planting season starts from the beginning of Cheshvan and runs till the end of Kislev. Much later, which is 2 weeks later than Reb Shimon Gamliel makes it, which would be only to the middle of Kislev, and a month later than Rabbi Yehuda makes it, which would be the end of Cheshvan. But even he only says the end of Kislev, not early Shvat or Adar time, like Rashi and Tosfos are explaining. That's Mekel, in the sense that he says that you can plant later in the season and it'll still be effective. Yeah. But Kula Haile Karma, even he doesn't say as late as Shvat or Adar. The answer is like Kasha Hod Kiblom in number Chorfi. One case is talking about if he took the field with the agreement that he's going to plant early crops, the other is if he agreed that he's going to be planting later crops. So it's true. Early crops are planted Cheshvan, Kislev, whatever it is time. Later crops can be planted all the way until Shvat or Adar time. So in that case, if he agreed that he's going to be planting later crops, later season crops,
with
then fine. Meaning, well, so Rashi says actually what we mean by earlier and later, early season crops means, for example, wheat, wheat and rye, which have to be planted at the beginning of the winter, otherwise they won't be ready in time. Atli is things that grow much faster. For example, Rashi says barley. Atli means late. For example, barley or beans, those can be planted as late as Adar. So that's what we're talking about, or Shvat, according to Tosfos. Yeah.
So wheat has to be done before.
So wheat has to be done much earlier, Cheshvan, Kislev time. Yeah, yeah. That's you find at the end of Makas Barad. Well, you find at the end of Makas Barad that Moshe reports to Parah on the state of the crops after the hail. He says what does he say over there? That the Pishta and the Sa'ora, the flax and the barley were damaged because they were already mostly mature. But the wheat was still tender, and the wheat and the spelt were still tender, and therefore they survived because wheat is planted earlier in the season. It has a much longer growing season. It takes like 5 months to grow. Makas Barad happened.
It wasn't ready,
but the point is it was so soft, it was still so young that it was able to survive the hail. It was able to survive being knocked around by the hail, as opposed to the Sa'ora, which was much more mature at that point. So we see, therefore, that yes, Sa'ora has a much shorter growing season, whereas Chita grows for many months, and therefore it has to be planted much earlier.
It's not only when you start to the crop, it's also the duration of
the specific
crop.
That's what we're talking about, in other words. So it can happen, for example. So let's say Sa'orim. Usually you would plant Sa'orim earlier in the season, and you'd harvest them around Nisan time. That's the Omer is brought from Sa'orim at that time in Nisan. It could happen, though, that you plant them as late as Shvat or Adar, and they're only ready in the middle of the spring. They're only ready ear seven time. Fine, but that's still a legitimate way to do it. As opposed to Chitim, if you want to be able to harvest them before it gets intensely hot, either the latest you want to be able to harvest them is Sivan time, you have to have planted them by Cheshvan. Yeah, you have to have planted them by Cheshvan Kislev time, otherwise they don't have enough time to grow. That's the point we're saying.
Chitim take what, 6 months?
5-6 months, yeah.
And Sarim?
Sarim take, I think, what? Yeah, two to three months, I think.
Two to three months. They're much more resistant.
So they're much, yeah. Okay. All right, I guess we'll continue tomorrow about the Shem.